Next item, 1128.
Authorize compliance and enforcement measures for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability administrative rules for energy-efficient building requirements for planned development bonuses.
Colleagues, today we're going to consider an ordinance authorizing compliance and enforcement measures for BPS administrative rules for energy-efficient building requirements for planned development bonuses. Barry Manning and Vin Mason are here to provide an overview and answer any questions. Good morning.
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 Barry Manning with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, joined by Vin Mason with our Green Buildings team. Thank you all. Again, as the mayor said, we're here today to request the council adoption of an ordinance that we're proposing that approves compliance and enforcement measures for a new administrative rule that we're creating that deals with energy efficiency standards for new buildings that would be utilizing a planned development bonus, which is a new provision within the zoning code that was adopted as part of the comprehensive plan. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background. Vin's going to talk a little bit about the details of the administrative rule and what we're asking for, and then we'd be happy to answer any questions for you. So just as background, as you all are aware, the comprehensive plan, 2035 comprehensive plan, was adopted in actually back in December of 2016 and then made effective in May of 2018. And as part of that, we also did a code reconciliation project, as you will recall. And as a part of that package, we adopted new commercial mixed-use zoning that applied outside of the central city and gateway. And as part of that zoning package for the commercial mixed-use zones, we included a new bonus called a planned development bonus, which is in Title 33, Chapter 130, which is an option for sites over 2 acres in some of the commercial zones outside of the central city gateway, historic and conservation districts, and some planned districts. So what that bonus does is illustrated here. Basically, it allows additional height and the use of the bonus FAR that's allowed by our code when a project meets certain criteria and has a certain level of review. The planned development bonus is intended to allow a developer with a large site to better utilize the FAR that we allow in our code. Anyhow, the reason for this is that they cannot effectively utilize all of the FAR that's available within the existing height limits on large sites. So this plan development bonus would require a design commission review, a type 3 design commission review, where they're reviewing the site plan, massing, height transitions and other transitions to adjacent neighborhoods and connections to the street system and the pedestrian system. It would require inclusionary housing as part of our inclusionary housing ordinance. The plan development bonus also requires, as part of the site plan, an allocation of 15% of the site area as a privately owned but publicly accessible park or plaza area that would be on the site. And then the final component, which we're talking about today, is it requires energy efficient buildings. And Bureau of Planning and Sustainability at the time of the adoption indicated that we would be developing administrative rules that set the parameters for these energy efficient buildings. We've been in process of doing that. Vin's going to explain that a little bit more in detail. And as we got into the process, we learned a little bit more about the complexities of it and are here to talk about some compliance and enforcement measures that we think are appropriate. So I'm going to hand it over to Vin.
Sure. Some additional background here. The draft administrative rule was created with a working group of architects, developers, and building energy professionals. It was also informed by a public comment period and a public hearing on May 9th, 2018. So to achieve that height bonus, buildings would have to be 50 to 70% more energy efficient than a conventional or typical building in the city currently. These energy efficiency targets are in alignment with the Energy Trust of Oregon's Path to Net Zero program and incentives. When a project comes forward to apply for a building permit, then they would present to BPS for compliance that the design of the building meets the energy efficiency target. Because the building permit, though, at the beginning isn't necessarily how the building turns out, there could be value engineering along the way. We also have an as-built design EUI. So the compliance enforcement mechanism actually kicks in about 2 years later, within 2 years later, And so the project or the owner of the building at that time would have to demonstrate that the as-built design UI or the actual or as-built design of energy performance or the actual performance of that building meets that energy target that was established. Next, I'd like to talk about the penalty proposed for noncompliance, because we want to assure that the penalty is substantial if, for some reason, which would be uncommon, but for some reason a building project has decided to value engineer out something along the way during the building permitting process. So an example of that might be like if a building proposed initially solar panels to achieve the energy efficiency target and then later decided through the building permit process that the solar panels would no longer be part of the project.
Get that set up.
So the example we have here is a multifamily building and a commercial office building. So you can get a sense for what type of numbers we're talking about here for the enforcement compliance penalty. The example is a city block, 40,000 square feet in its footprint, 10 stories high, because the bonus would bring a building up to could potentially bring a building up to 10 stories from about 5 or 6 floors. So at 400,000 square feet, we looked at the project valuation, which is the numbers that BDS uses for their permitting process, their International Code Council building valuation tables that are developed across all jurisdictions, tend to be slightly lower than actual, or significantly lower than actual design costs and construction costs. So for a project of this size, we wanted to look at what would be the energy efficiency cost premium to meet the energy targets that are proposed. And so you can see that in the next line there for both the multifamily and office buildings. So we wanted to assure that whatever compliance penalty we have, that it approaches that number and as an adequate incentive to not assume that a building could purchase the height by not meeting the standards. And so there's a range in the penalty from 0.5% to 5% of the project valuation, and that range is depending on how close they come to meeting the energy efficiency target. Generally, we don't expect buildings to reach this point. I think a project would come through the door. They're seeking the bonus. They know that they could receive a penalty, and we also know that these buildings can already be built, and we expect the project teams to move forward. But if for some reason they get do not pursue the energy target, and they've already received their height, we need to assure that there's a significant compliance penalty.
So with that, what we're requesting today, we'd be happy to answer any questions council has about this. But we're asking you to adopt the ordinance we've proposed that would approve the compliance enforcement approach that we've outlined today and that penalty, which is significantly more substantial than any of the other zoning enforcement penalties that we have on books, hence why we're asking for this approval. Authorize BPS to periodically amend the administrative rule as we see the need to. And we can come back to council with the details of an enforcement approach if that changes at all. And then also in concert with this, because this would be implemented through as a zoning violation, if there were a violation that were identified, we would need to amend the enforcement fee and penalty schedule that is a part of the BDS package of Title III, and that's included in your packet as well.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation, and I appreciate that this is a sticky or tricky issue to figure out how to manage. But isn't the penalty, shouldn't it be more related to the value of the increased square footage rather than the cost of the energy? Because obviously $4 million is a lot of money, but if you're making $4 million a year more because you've got 55 feet more in building, and that's an ongoing benefit, isn't that what's going to dissuade people from cheating or value engineering out?
That's a great question. And one of the reasons we didn't gear it on that was that the FAR that we're allowing here is not really increasing on a site. It just allows you to better utilize the area. So the increased height is just a better way to utilize existing floor area that you might otherwise have erred. So we decided not to go down that path initially for that reason and the other reason that the additional construction costs of this type of construction may offset some of those benefits. But it is a bit of a complex issue.
That is a very good answer in terms of not increasing the FAR.
Yeah, the maximum FAR on these sites is in a CM3 zone, for instance, is 5-1, which is the same as it is in the base zone with maximum bonuses with inclusionary housing as well. The issue is on large sites, you can't always effectively utilize all that FAR, and that additional height allows the flexibility to do that.
Okay, and then where will the money that's collected go to?
Right now, our understanding, that was another point of discussion as part of our process developing this rule. BPS actually considered whether we could administer this rule ourselves. We don't have the capacity to do that right now. We had discussions with BDS, and they felt that the zoning enforcement approach was the a mechanism to enforce this. It's in place now, and the mechanisms are set up. So we've coordinated effectively with them. BDS would assess the penalty. Those penalties, if they were collected through their process, would go back to BDS at this point in time. We have had some discussions about potentially creating an energy efficiency fund of some sort, but we haven't fully fleshed that out at this point in time. We didn't know if the penalties would be enacted by council and move forward. We can pursue more research on that and see if we can set up a mechanism to do that, but we haven't done that to date.
Yeah, I think that would be a good thing to do, and then maybe if there were affordable housing or other projects that might need some assistance to do those energy efficiency, you could use the fund for that, for example.
Okay. We can certainly research that.
A couple of questions.
Commissioner Saltzman.
So do I understand you said you would assess compliance 2 years into a project? Did I hear you say that, or did I just hear that? So,
yeah, that is correct. So okay. The initial energy performance is determined by an energy use intensity in the design model that's typical for modeling of these types of buildings. And that goes along with the building permit at the beginning, and that where they get their height approved. And then after the building is built, though, that's where we wanted to determine, for instance, if solar panels have been removed. So we wanted to have some after the construction confirmation. So part of that is looking at the as-built design EUI, which could actually be the day after a building is completed. They could demonstrate compliance rather than wait 2 years. Mm-hmm. The reason why we have up to 2 years is because some buildings would choose to use actual performance. And so instead of us, the BPS, going and confirming the compliance, we're actually requiring the owner of the building to submit a third-party verification that it's completed. Mm-hmm. Some of those third-party verifications can be done at the day after construction. When they're based on actual energy performance, those verifications are done after a year of data. Often that first year is a year where the building is settling into its design. And so they might wait for up to 2 years.
So waiting for 2 years is a way to make sure the building is really operating, the systems are operating as intended, efficiently as intended. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question was, what happens if a building is sold in that time to somebody else and it's not complying?
Yeah, so as we have the admin rule currently set up, it's the owner of the building at that time when compliance is demonstrated. So if the building is sold, then the new owner would have to demonstrate that compliance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'd add that as part of the design commission review, there'll be a condition of approval that subsequent buildings built under this plan development would be subject to the energy efficiency requirements. So there's a history that goes along with the projects as well.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and this is recorded somewhere? I mean, they're a prospective purchaser of a building would easily encounter this encumbrance on the property?
I believe we have a covenant that goes along with it as well.
Yeah, there'd be a covenant recorded at Multnomah County. So the covenant would last up to 20 years.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just fearful that, we're going to see a subsequent owner say, well, nobody told me about this and, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you got it pretty well thought out.
We've tried to put in those safeguards, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Very good. Any further questions? Any public testimony on this item?
Yes, we have one person signed up, Maggie.
Thank you.
Oh, did I?
Are you Maggie?
Signed up.
Yeah.
That's you.
Oh.
Come on up.
I'm going to pass.
Very good. This is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading.